This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri. We're going to meet some very interesting people doing some very different things this morning. We'll talk to the moderator of a group that's creating a safe space where people can have meaningful discussions across the political divide. We're going to visit a business that luxuriates in lavender and another that's all toys and games, my major in college. But first, we're going to talk to a gentleman who is either a Renaissance man or is that guy you knew in college who kept changing his major. Or he might be more like the one who got degrees in everything. What I do know is he was the first world palindrome champion, and he has his own Wikipedia listing, so he must be important. Introducing Mark Saltvite. Mark, welcome to the alliterative Vermont Viewpoint.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be on such a great independent radio station.
Oh, thanks so much. And listeners, if you're into palindromes or football coach Chip Kelly, you'll want to pay close attention and maybe give us a call at 244-1777. 1-877-291-8255. You can email us at vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Okay, Mark, start off by listing all the things you are. Palindromist, stand-up comedian, bon vivant, go.
Writer, I ran a computer training company for a while. I work in a library, you know, dad, homeowner. I don't know.
Dad's a palindrome. Are you upset that you didn't get a name like Bob, which is a palindrome?
You know, Bob is too easy. Like, Bob, you're done. You don't add anything to it. I think the name Eva is a much better name for palindromist because Eva have, Eva save, Eva cave. Oh. Then you can build off of it and do something. Bob, it's just boring and done.
Gotcha. All right, fair enough. I think that's a fair assessment of the name Bob. I don't want to get Bob's calling in and be really upset.
There's a lot of Bobs.
Yeah.
Let's be careful there.
I'm not sure you'd ever apply for a job that requires a resume, but if so, yours must be like a tome.
Well, they never fit, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, so, like, I delivered phone books for a while. I was a barista. I've done manual labor. I dug ditches. I have a lot of items, but most of them hurt rather than help me get a particular job. Maybe that's my problem.
That could be. But you're doing quite well. Hey, you've got the Wikipedia listing. All right, I'm going to try a few. Wow, pop, tot, mom, dad, rotor. Okay, that's just about as far as I can go with palindromic words. But that's just the start.
Sentences, my friend.
I know, I know.
I find sentences a lot more interesting, and that's what got me into it.
Yeah, the words are just a start for a palindromist, right?
Yeah, you just find them. You know, it's like finding a gold nugget on the ground. There's only a few of them. People are going to grab them really quick, and there's not going to be any lying around. But sentences you can put together yourself. And when I started the Palindromist magazine, one of the ideas is that it's not as hard as people think to create their own palindrome. I actually do a workshop for kids where I go to, like, fourth, fifth graders, and show them an easy way to build their own palindrome. So I've never had a kid not be able to make a palindrome.
Wow. They're more advanced than I am. I'm going to admit that. But what's your interest? How did this all start for you?
Well, you know, like I just described, when I was in fourth grade or third grade, I forget which, they taught us about palindromes. And I have two brothers who are very close in age to me. We all got fascinated by this, and we were all racking our brain because we wanted to invent our own palindrome. And we weren't that good at it. The best we ever came up with was radar, kayak, radar, which, it's not that fun. But then we thought we were going to be famous as the legendary naughty boys who created a dirty palindrome.
Uh-oh.
Which was eat, poop, tea.
Wait a minute.
I know, but then we looked at it and we realized it didn't actually work because the EA doesn't reverse.
Right.
And being little kids, then we got bored and lost interest. And about 20 years later, I had insomnia one night, and I thought, well, palindromes was fun. Let's give that a shot. And I picked up a dictionary and realized somehow I had picked up the knack, and I wrote this super long palindrome, and I'm like, hey, I can do this now for some reason. I later explained the method in an article I called The Seven Useless Arts of the Plundermist.
How
if
elaborate?
You want to really break it down.
How elaborate do palindromes get?
Oh, two people have written novels where the entire novel was one single palindrome.
Oh, my.
Now, I think they're gibberish. And more importantly, they're no fun to read, right? There's no point in doing this if they're not fun. In fact, I would say that about any novel. I've never read Infinite Jest. It's 1,000 pages. Sorry, that's not happening. I don't care how good it is. But people seem to have this fascination with long palindromes. But, you know, has anyone ever handed you a novel and say, oh, my gosh, Rick, you have to read this. It's so long.
No.
Get away from me. And that's kind of how I feel about palindromes. You can make them long, and I have a couple long ones, but you better do the extra work to make it still be fun.
You became the first world champion palindromist.
Yeah.
What does one have to do for that title?
Well, so are you familiar with the show Iron Chef?
I am, sure.
Oddly enough, it's based on that. A stand-up comedian from San Francisco named Nate O'Green created a stand-up comedy show called Iron Comic, where comedians show up at the beginning of the show and get some audience suggestions, and then they have like 20 minutes to write entirely new jokes based on those suggestions.
All right.
And so we stole that idea to make the World Palindrome Championship. You know this guy, Will Shortz, from NPR and the New York Times Crossword Puzzle. So he organized the whole thing. There was this schmuck from Boston who went around suddenly proclaiming himself the world's first master palindromist. And, you know, there's not a lot of people who write palindromes. There's maybe 20 of us on Earth, okay? But we all email, and we're all friends, and we all, like, send each other our new palindromes. We're like, oh, check this one out. Oh, that's hilarious. You know, or I might change that. It would make it better. And so this guy comes along, and we're like, who are you? And we all got, you know, somewhat huffy in a way I'm not entirely proud of. Mm-hmm. But I was complaining to Will Shortz, who's been a subscriber to the Palindromist since the first issue. And he was like, well, there's one way to settle this. And he set up a competition at his American Crossword Puzzle Tournament. And this guy, Barry Duncan, who Mr. Braggart, showed up and came in 8th out of 8 in the competition. And we haven't heard much word from him since then. But then we realized it was pretty fun. And so we've had two of them now. There should be another one in about 2 years.
I shiver with anticipation. I can't wait.
Well, did you know about the movie?
The movie?
Yeah, there's a documentary film about the second World Palindrome Championship, which took place in 2017. It's called The Palindromists. I'll send you guys the URL, or it's just thepalindromists.com. And it was completed a couple months ago. There's this pandemic going around. I don't know if you heard about this.
No.
So it's not been released in movie theaters yet, but they're finalizing a deal to release it in the spring. It's been in a couple film festivals, and it is the story of the second World Palindrome Championship.
Do these championships have to be held in a city that is a palindrome itself?
No. That would be a little, and they're not on a kayak or... the second one was in Stamford, Connecticut, gotcha. Which I guess you could say Doctor of Matt's Stamford. I don't know. That's not a very good palindrome.
Not a great one.
The first one was in Brooklyn, which is completely impossible.
Forget about it.
It's a pretty cool film. I've seen it, and Weird Al Yankovic is in it, and the actress Danica McKellar and Will Shortz and some other people. I'm not going to say who won, whether I was able to defend my title or not. That would be a spoiler.
All right.
But it was a lot of fun, and the third one should be coming up in a couple of years. But anyone who's interested in this conversation, I highly recommend that movie.
Are you fun at dinner parties, or are you the Cliff Clavin of the group?
Oh, boy, that's that, I mean, how can I answer that question? I work as a stand-up comedian, so I like to think I'm entertaining, and I do listen to people, actually, on occasion, and not only talk all the time, so I think that's a pretty important part of being good at dinner parties. But, I mean, these days, who would know a dinner party?
Oh, true.
Zoom dinners just really don't appeal
to
me that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where do you pick up palindromes? I mean, are you listening to somebody and you hear them say something,
Good question. What I find, my method, and I think this is pretty common, is you see words in the wild that have a word in them backwards. And then there's letters left over. So you just keep an eye out for one that hasn't really been done to death yet, like evil and live. That's been done. Rats and star, you know, don't even waste your time. Those are hats.
But, old hat.
Like, one of my favorite palindromes was created in World War II by one of the guys who was breaking the Nazis' Enigma code. And he noticed that the word prevent has never in it backwards. And then there's a couple letters left over on either side, which is good because that gives you something to build off of. And write the whole palindrome.
Oh, that's genius.
Would you like to hear what he came up with?
Yes, please.
Okay, so it was, Doc, note, I dissent. A fast never prevents a fatness. I diet on cod.
Wow.
Not only a great palindrome, but it's really good dietary advice.
It really is. Oh, that's genius. Man.
Yeah, he was fighting the Nazis, but he needed to take a time out and pull an all-nighter to come up with that one.
There was no internet at the time, so this
no,
is...
No, no cable TV. It was pretty slow in Bletchley Park.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, is there big money in being the Tom Brady of palindromes?
I made $5,000 for one palindrome once.
Wow.
For a corporate client, a corporation actually called me up and wanted a palindrome for their annual dinner. And they were like, what's your usual rate? As if there's a usual rate. And I had a friend who worked in advertising. He's like, hold on, what should I say? Like, $100? He goes, oh, up, up, up. You know, he's like, they've got a budget. Just say, you know, what? $50,000 be in your budget. I'm like, I can't say $50,000. So I said five, and they were just like, bam, done.
Wow.
I said $50,000.
You know, there are people scrambling right now who are listening, who are quarantined at home thinking, man, I'm going to start writing some of these things.
Well, you know, if you just look around, you will see, look at all your words backwards. It's not that hard to read a word backwards. And you will see words in them and take those. Write them down, and then start trying to fill in those extra letters, and that's how you come up with one.
Mm. So how long have you been really seriously a professional palindromist?
About 25 years.
Wow.
Not long.
No, it's good lineage, yeah. Any real classics you want to share with us?
Sure. Well, you know, this, I don't know if this is a little racy, but in the same palindrome competition... So the code breakers at Bletchley Park actually had a competition, and the first one they came up with was sex at noon taxes.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a Thanksgiving one. May a moody baby doom a yam.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah.
My friend John Agee is really the only person other than my one palindrome who's ever made money off of palindromes. He does cartoon books. He's a really gifted artist. And he does cartoon books of palindromes for kids. Mm-hmm. And his most famous one is, go hang a salami. I'm a lasagna hog. Which I think is probably the most famous current one. A short one I wrote was, an igloo? Cool, Gina.
Oh, that's genius.
That's kind of a joke. Well, I built on one of John Agee's. He had an igloo pool, Gina, but I thought that could be improved a little bit.
Yeah.
We had two in the magazine I like. A guy named Thomas Comerford, who is a waiter, wrote, stressed, no tips, spit on desserts. We cannot actually endorse that action.
No, we cannot.
Palindrome. Here's one I can endorse from the famous ukulele maestro Jim Beloff, who lives in Connecticut, just across the border. He wrote, for husbands, he wrote, "Lapses? Order red roses, pal."
Oh, great advice. And in palindromic style. Mark, have you ever used palindromes to woo a woman?
It's funny you should say that. You know, I am a stand-up comedian, and it took me 12 years to figure out how to talk about palindromes on a comedy stage where tipsy people who can't see words printed out would understand it. Mm. And that was kind of the angle I took, which was that, palindromes just really confused people, especially when I try to use them to impress women, you know, where I'd explain, you know, palindromes, words and sentences are the same as backwards and forwards. And the lady would go, huh? And I'd go, yeah, exactly like that. H-U-H. So at that point, you know, I know she's totally digging me, right?
Right.
The lady. So I'd start pouring it off and throwing down original palindromes that I wrote, like Yoda's sad, oi. Or Snub Dumbo Bob, mud buns, you know. And so by that point, of course, she'd be melting in my hands. Mm-hmm. So I'd go for the kill, move in close, and, you know, give her a racy palindrome. I'd look her straight in the eye and say, "Wary Alpine Zen, I play raw." But unfortunately, women would just tend to look back and go, oh no.
Oh my. Well, we're setting a record here because it's the most calls we've ever had to one of our shows for a palindromist. So we've got Lawrence calling from Marshfield. Lawrence, thank you so much for saving us today.
The first palindrome I was aware of, and it's still my favorite, is history class. And we were studying, and right in the textbook it was written, and we were studying Teddy Roosevelt. And it's a simple one, but it's just wonderful.
Right.
It's a man, a plan, a canal, Panama.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the best.
Yeah.
Because it's punchy, and it makes sense.
Yeah. It was
right.
That could be on a billboard for an ad campaign for Panama. Thanks, Lawrence, for calling in and sharing that one. Now, I don't want to just go all palindrome all the time, but right. If we do, I'll be stunned that we made it through a half hour that way.
Well, you know where to reach me. I've got some other topics I talk about, too.
Well, yeah, one I want to
mention Chip Kelly up top. There's not a whole lot of people who are into Chip Kelly these days.
I know. I'm an Eagles fan.
UCLA fan.
I'm an Eagles fan, so please convince me that he deserves my love and respect.
Don't kill me. You know, here's the thing. Eagles fans are you know, hate Chip Kelly these days with the hatred of a thousand burning suns. But the fact of the matter is, he was coach for 3 years. He made some tough choices, and they won the Super Bowl finally a couple years later.
Yeah.
And I just don't buy this narrative that he destroyed the team, because no one creates a franchise from scratch in 2 years. And I will go out on a limb and be a little controversial and say getting rid of DeSean Jackson was one of the key moves that made that Super Bowl possible.
And he's back, and they're losing again, but they are in first in the NFC East.
Coincidence? Hey. I think.
Yeah. Hey, you're not going to believe this, Mark.
Set the record.
Yeah.
Lowest winning.
Yeah. Yeah. 3-5-1. You're not going to believe this, but we have another call. Jed is calling from the Northeast Kingdom. Good morning, Jed.
Great.
Go right ahead, Jed. Well, Jed might just be prank calling the palindromist. We don't know, but or there might be a problem with the connection.
It's intimidating to speak to your point. It really is.
I'm shaking here.
Yeah. I try to be friendly, but, you know, it happens.
So you're not going to believe this as well, but about a month ago, a friend texted me and said that he and his wife had just watched something called Creature from the Haunted Sea. It's a Roger Corman film.
Wow.
In your checkered past, you had a brush with Roger Corman.
I did. My first job out of school was trying to make it in movies, and I worked on a couple cool films like Drugstore Cowboy and some really uncool films like Iron Heart, which was a bad kung fu movie, and Love and Dynamite, which was supposed to be a wacky thriller romance about a crazy guy. And then I went down to Los Angeles, and I thought I'd make it big, and I got a job at Roger Corman's studio as a production assistant and answering phones, and you do whatever you can to, you know, to get on there. And I ended up playing the monster in a movie for half of the final scene because I was the B-unit monster. This was Watchers 2, The Outsider. You remember that, right?
Yeah. Big film, big film.
And the fancy suit that the star wore broke right when they're about to film the scene. And Roger Corman's like, "We're losing daylight here. Put the kid in the suit and let's just go." And so they squeezed me into this rubber suit. They paid me a short case of Michelob as a bonus for my acting ability. And I went around with my arms out in the air going, "Rrr, rrr." And they finally told me to stop making noise because people were laughing, and it's supposed to be a scary movie. And I was not trying to be funny. I was just, they're like, "Yeah, we'll dub that in later. Don't worry about it, kid."
But that was a speaking part. You would have got like more money, I think, if they left
don't
it
really
in.
Follow the rules all that carefully, at Roger Corman Studios. Here's my favorite story when I was down there. So they had a set involving a castle, and Roger Corman is the only man who's consistently made money in films ever, because he keeps the cost so low.
Mm-hmm.
And it drove him crazy that he paid the money for a castle set. I'm sorry.
Oh, you got about a minute. Less than a minute here.
Yeah, okay. So he said, "I can't just have that set for one movie." So he went to the receptionist and said, "Can you write a script involving a castle by Monday?" And she did, and he filmed another movie just to get the $2,000 he spent on the castle set out of it.
Of course. And she wrote it as a palindrome. Oh, no, that's another story.
Exactly.
Mark Saltvite is a jack of all trades and master of most. Mark, thanks for making time to be on with us this morning. You will
thanks
be back.
All right. A lot of fun. All right.
Yep. CBS News is next. Then we'll be back with Shauna Ratner of a group called Braver Angels here on Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Exciting things are happening in Warren Village. The Pitcher Inn and Warren Store are under new management. Upgrades and improvements are in the works, maintaining the ambiance and character while breathing new energy and resources into these iconic properties. We are open while practicing all CDC protocols. Come for lunch at our Rockin' Deli and see for yourself what the buzz is all about. Both businesses are hiring, especially seeking fine dining room staff and sales associates for our boutique. Still fun, funky, and friendly, but better than ever. Open daily on Main Street, Warren Village.
Back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. You don't have to pay close attention to politics these days to know that Americans are more divided than we've been in modern history. Phrases like Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, Defund the Police provoke rage and vitriol online and off. Our next guest saw this happening and decided to do something about it. Shauna Ratner has been moderating Braver Angels Franklin County for a few years now. The group's goal is to create a safe space where people can have meaningful discussions across a political divide. Shauna Ratner, I want to thank you for being on Vermont Viewpoint this morning.
You're very welcome, Rick. My pleasure.
And listeners, if you'd like to join the discussion, you can call now, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Do you have a group where people can come from the left, right, or center and have meaningful discussions? If so, let us know. Now, Shauna Ratner, where did the idea of Braver Angels begin?
Well, the national organization Braver Angels began with three men, David Blankenhorn, Karen O'Connor, and Bill Dougherty. And they got together, actually David Lapp, I'm sorry, not Karen, and they got together because they were concerned about demonization and what was happening after the 2016 election. In terms of Braver Angels Franklin County, that actually began separately out of my concern. So after the 2016 election, I became aware of the number of people in my own circle of friends and acquaintances who were saying, I hate those people. I will not sit in the same room with them. I will not talk to them, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, what? You know, this is America. We have differences of opinion. We were intended, actually, by our founders to have differences of opinion and to be able to sit down and hash things through with the notion that nobody has a unique hold on reality. Everyone's experience is a little bit different. Everyone's perspective is a little bit different. And the richness of that can provide us with better solutions, but we won't have any solutions if we're afraid of each other. So thinking that, I thought, well, what can I bring to the table? I'm just a single individual. I'm a citizen. What do I have? And I was fortunate to have a career of about 35, 36 years, and one of the skills I developed during that career was that of being a facilitator. Mm-hmm. So I felt pretty confident that I could help create a safe space for people to be able to have useful dialogue, and that I could teach and train people in the skills they would need to do that. But I didn't know if it was a crazy idea or not. So, I started, trying it out on lots of people in my circle, and some of them said, yeah, that's a crazy idea. And one of them said, I just heard about a group on NPR. And at that time, the name of the group was Better Angels. It's since switched to Braver Angels. Mm-hmm. But they said, they've done something like that in Ohio. They brought together a group of reds and a group of blues over a weekend, and they had a very successful experience, and they're going to put out a guidebook on how to do it. And I thought, well, all right then. So I called and spoke with David Lapp, and he said, yeah, there's not going to be a guidebook, but not now. But we're doing something called the One America Bus Tour. We're going to all get on a bus, and we're going to drive through the Northeast, stop at various places, and hold workshops. And he said, how about if I put St. Albans on the bus tour? And so I said, sure.
Wow.
And at that point, this was really nothing but an idea. And this was probably around March or April of 2017, and the bus was going to be coming through in July. So that gave a few months to find other people to help me organize this and to recruit participants, which was no easy task. And so the first participant I recruited is a gentleman named Dan Pipes, who happens to be my neighbor, and we were actually hoping that he would be able to be on this call and contribute his perspective, but I gather that connection wasn't able to get made in time.
Well, Shauna, Dan is probably the greatest person on earth, because he called in and he's going to join us. So, Dan Pipes, I'm going to introduce you as well, another of the Braver Angels organizers, Dan Pipes. So, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint, Dan.
Thank you. I really appreciate you giving us this opportunity. It's very kind of you.
Well, I'll give a question to Dan now. Who are the members of this chapter, and does it skew in any direction or another?
Well, it's interesting. Over the couple of years we've been doing this, it kind of ebbs and flows. Some gatherings will have more of the blues, and some gatherings will have more of the reds. To more specifically answer your question, the people who make it up the group are usually friends and acquaintances of other members of the group. It's kind of that's been the model so far as to how we get people who are interested in these opportunities.
Shauna, why do people say they want to join a group like this?
Well, I think that people want to join who are interested in understanding the world from other people's perspectives, who are tired of feeling stuck in their own bubbles, and who are uneasy about making the leap to admit other realities. I mean, we all are comfortable in our own worlds. We're all comfortable with our own assumptions. And I think that our instinct when we're confronted by the other is to be frightened. And so I think that the people who are attracted to the group are folks who have the courage, hence Braver Angels, to want to wrestle with that fear and get over it and begin to be able to see other people as human beings who have experiences and whose experiences inform views that are not the same as theirs. And I think actually there are many, many people in that category. So I would say that we don't appeal to the extremes on either side, but we do appeal to the majority of folks who are not extreme, who simply would like to find a better way forward.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, most of us, we've seen it, how quickly political discussions can descend into name-calling and insults. So how do you get people to come into conversations about these heated topics with cool heads and to keep cool heads, or do you?
Well, we have some very clear rules up front, and Shauna does a great job before we discuss a topic of reminding those who have participated before and clarifying those who have who are perhaps on their first meeting, how we engage and what we're going to do. And it's a matter of, most people come into these meetings with the intention of, we may disagree, but we're not going to be disagreeable. It's not a bumper sticker kind of, or a meme kind of gotcha. That's not what we're looking for.
Shauna, do you have a specific topic or issue when people meet to discuss?
Yes, often we do. Usually we do. And it's interesting, the group has chosen to have that topic be a surprise.
Oh.
So that people don't come with sort of armed for bear, as it were, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually worked out really well.
I
so
like
we've
that.
We've covered topics ranging from public safety, gun ownership and public safety, to the opioid epidemic, to the role of the media, we've covered lots of different things to what we're learning from this pandemic and how we'd like to see the world be different going forward. So yes, there typically is a topic.
How often do you meet?
Once a quarter.
Mm-hmm. And Dan Pipes, has COVID changed how you meet, and has it changed the nature of the discussions?
Regrettably, yes. I'm not a big fan of Zoom. I don't gravitate towards technology intuitively, and I just find it annoying. I much prefer the face-to-face interactions, the interpersonal cues, and watching and listening to how people explain their beliefs and how they arrive at their what they understand to be true. I think we miss a lot of that in the Zoom, but it's important enough that we are moving forward and with the restrictions that are in place.
Mm-hmm. Shauna, people think of discussions as a lot of statements and declarations, but you've also done a lot of work with your group around the basics of asking a question. Can you tell us why that's really so important in reducing hostility in politics?
Absolutely. So one of the things we learned the very first time this group met back in July of 2017 was that people had a very difficult time crafting questions that were questions coming from a place of genuine curiosity. And, the greatest antidote to fear is curiosity. You can't really hold those two feelings at the same time. So curiosity is terribly important, but it only works if it's genuine. And when you craft a question that is a kind of, wait a minute, how could you be so stupid as to think blah, 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 right? That's not a question of curiosity, right?
Right.
That's a gotcha question. And yet those are the kinds of questions that left to their own devices we saw people crafting. And so we realized, okay, there needs to be some training on this. There needs to be some opportunity to learn a new skill here. And the skill has to do with asking a question from a place of genuine curiosity that you don't know the answer to, and being willing and interested in actually listening to the answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that there's something you don't know going into the conversation that you would like to find out. And then structuring your question so that it's neutral and leaves an open and inviting space for the person you're talking to walk into.
So ask that question again the right way, please?
I understand that you have views about abortion. And I would really like to understand how you came to those views.
Gotcha. Really good. Dan, what do you enjoy most about this group?
Pete, I enjoy getting down to the common denominators that we agree upon and finding the common ground and we get right to the kernel of the personal experiences for individuals on either side of the political spectrum and finding out that, hey, there are things as Americans that we agree upon. And that's really valuable.
Dan, have you talked to other people in the state about starting chapters?
I personally have not, although I have gotten a few phone calls. I'm more interested in the Franklin County and remaining local, and that's
sure.
Just a personal choice.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you both this. I'll start with you, Shauna. What have you personally learned from moderating this group?
Oh, my goodness. I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about people and what the time and the effort it takes to form trust and how the amazing rewards of investing in that over time. I mean, our group is so very different now than it was, you know, 3 years ago in terms of what we're able to do together. And that's just been amazingly rewarding. I've also learned specific things. So some from the group and some just from relationships. I have a clear memory of Dan, who is my neighbor, coming up my driveway one day and us talking about the use of guns and ownership of guns. And I'm someone who's never owned a gun and has no particular intention of ever owning a gun. And Dan's response was, aren't you lucky to live in a country where you don't need to? And I had never considered that, ever in my life. It had never occurred to me. So those kinds of insights, that kind of being brought up short to say, whoa, right?
Yeah.
Is immeasurably valuable.
How about you, Dan? What have you learned?
I learned to really, as Shauna said, to craft questions and get better at asking questions that kind of tease out the personal experiences. As my profession, I was a military officer for 31 years, and I've deployed regularly to many places. And so my views are certainly formed and through that lens of what I did professionally for a very long time. And everyone has those experiences, and learning to ask the question, what has led you to believe this about the topic? That's where we stumble across some really surprising commonalities, and it's very valuable.
I'd love to believe that this is all perfectly peaceful and you just have these nice calm discussions, but are there ever disagreements that kind of get a little out of bounds, Shauna? And if so, how are they handled?
Well, I think one of the things that we did after a while when people got the hang of how to ask questions is we had the whole group vet questions before they were answered. So people would come up with their questions for the other side, and then they would share them with the entire group. And the entire group would offer advice and say, well, you know, I can see you'd really like to know about X, but you're asking in this way, and that's not going to get you where you want to go. What if you reframed it this way? And occasionally in that process, the asker, the person who had come up with a question, literally could not see the difference. They just couldn't understand what the group was driving at. And so there were occasions when we had to say, well, okay, we'd like you to go home and think about that. We're not going to ask that question tonight.
We had moments of what I refer to as self-pruning. Some people really just did not want to have a civil discussion. They wanted to make their points, and then they wanted to jump up and down and say, why don't you see it this way? I can't believe you're that, fill in the blank, or whatever adjective you want. And unfortunately, we had a few people that, self-pruned.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, we're almost out of time, but do you have a favorite moment from the last few years of the Braver Angels?
I think, yeah, I've got many, but I think if I had to pick one, it was when I realized, and I, gosh, Shauna might help me, I forget the topic, but one of the, I realized that every one of the blues listed a belief in religion, in a religious, you know, entity in God, one form or another, as one of their primary motivators and in life and guiding their principles and their interactions with others. And that was, I mean, it sounds simple, mm-hmm. but it was something that I hadn't considered.
Yeah. And Shauna, with only about a minute left, I want to know how important a group like this is right now in our history.
Personally, I think it's incredibly important. I mean, this is a completely volunteer effort by everybody involved, including me. And I would not be putting my time into this if I didn't think it was incredibly important. You know, we need more safe spaces where we can relearn the skills of civil and civic dialogue if we're going to keep our democracy healthy and alive and moving forward, and if we're going to be able to solve problems together.
Shauna Ratner and Dan Pipes are the organizers of Braver Angels Franklin County. It's been absolutely wonderful speaking with you and getting along with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Thank you.
CBS News is next, and then we'll be back with more of Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Exciting things are happening in Warren Village. The Pitcher Inn and Warren Store are under new management. Upgrades and improvements are in the works, maintaining the ambiance and character while breathing new energy and resources into these iconic properties. We are open while practicing all CDC protocols. Come for lunch at our Rockin' Deli and see for yourself what the buzz is all about. Both businesses are hiring, especially seeking fine dining room staff and sales associates for our boutique. Still fun, funky, and friendly, but better than ever. Open daily on Main Street, Warren Village.
We're back with Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. On this program, we're going to try to find some interesting parts of Vermont for you to visit. And I hope we'll introduce you to some great Vermont businesses, and we'll talk to some Vermonters who you'd love to be friends with and learn their stories. Our next guest pretty much has all of that going on. She is Michelle Capron, and she owns Lavender Essentials of Vermont in Derby. It's a farm, it's products, and it's some really wonderful experiences. Michelle Capron, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thank you so much.
And listeners, if you have questions about Lavender Essentials, or if you know about them or want to ask about lavender, give us a call, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Michelle, describe the farm there in Derby.
So we have a 10-acre farm here in Derby. We grow lavender and sunflowers, buckwheat, vegetables, herbs, and are always looking to expand. This year we have planted garlic. So we have taken our land that used to be dairy farmland and repurposed that into something different, something that locals as well as non-local people can experience. We provide experiences here more than anything.
Why did you decide to grow lavender?
So there was a few different reasons. Lavender, we just kind of picked out of a hat, so to speak. We found that lavender was said to be one of the highest grossing crops you could grow in the U.S. And my husband and I were looking for a way to get out of the proverbial rat race and find a way to stay home and enjoy the land that we have, take advantage of the views, and allow other people to come see it, kind of getting back to that romantic Vermont notion.
Okay, so how much did you know about lavender before you started growing it?
Nothing. We became experts by trial and error. I promise you, if there's mistakes to be made, we've probably made them, and we'd love to tell you about it.
How long have you been growing it?
We've been growing lavender for 2 years, and we've been open to the public We've been growing lavender for 4 years and open to the public for 2.
I know there's a few lavender farms up in Quebec as I've driven through the eastern provinces. I've passed them. And all of you are a bit out of what I think is the optimal zone for lavender cultivation. So why?
So lavender is very, very unique. There's a lot of different ways to bring the public in for lavender. The farms in Quebec, as well as ourselves, we do cover our lavender in the winter. It is a Mediterranean plant, so we're definitely fighting nature a little bit. But lavender has so many powerful aromatherapy properties that it's for a farmer, it's a really big pull for the health and wellness of it all.
Yeah, let's talk about those benefits of lavender other than, you know, the beautiful calming scent, which I guess is one of the benefits of lavender.
So lavender has many properties. It's one of only 12 of the essential oils out of the 400 on the market that are known to be antibacterial, antifungal, and antiseptic. Aromatherapy is not just about something that smells good, but aromatherapy is actually powerful to the molecular level, as when you smell something that has essential oils in it, those molecules are going up into your nasal passages. They're triggering your lymphatic system, then triggering your serotonin, which is your happy drug. So aromatherapy, whether it's lavender or sweet orange oil, all have different values and properties, and it's a lot more than it smells good. For centuries, we have used essential oils for healing, as well as for washing linens and things like that.
So lavender will keep me happy?
It certainly will help you along in your day for many different ways. I can tell you that we bottle our products in our home. Mm-hmm. We're a very small business, and we've been bottling for 2 years now. And just the act of bottling and using our own products in our home, we feel the power of aromatherapy has prevented us from getting any colds or flus. Wow. We have not been sick as a household of 4 for 2 years.
That's interesting. Now, when people come to visit Lavender Essentials, I believe you do have pick-your-own opportunities?
Yes. Lavender blooms sometime between mid-July all the way up through mid-September. Depending on each year, it's a little bit different, but we do offer you pick during certain times of the year. People really enjoy getting back to the earth, really enjoying picking bouquets of their own, taking time to really enjoy the fresh air and the phenomenal views that we have.
Yeah, talk about the views that you do have.
So the views where we are, we sit at 1,600 feet. We actually have a wind turbine on the farm, so you'll always expect a small breeze. The views are spectacular. Not enough pictures in the world on our website or Facebook can really express to you what you're seeing. We can see hundreds of miles. We can see Jay Peak. We can see Lake Nefermagog. We can see both sets of wind turbines in Lowell as well as Sheffield. We can see Canada, a lot of, you know, the local Vermont hills and valleys. It is just an unbelievable view. We often joke, people will come to the lavender farm, they think, to see the lavender, but when they leave, they're only talking about the view.
Wow, that's kind of beautiful. Yeah, what have people experienced who have come probably from within Vermont? Because a lot of us don't really get to all the wonderful places here. But when you have people come from out of state or even out of the country in a non-COVID year, you know, what do they experience there? And what do they tell you about what they've seen?
When people come to the farm, they're most often struck by the view, the family setting, as well as the personability of everybody working in and around. It really brings people back to the roots of their grandparents and parents. Anyone that grew up in a small town or a small farm really feels the value of keeping that type of lifestyle alive. So it becomes, they come to see the flowers, but they really have come to see, you know, that romantic notion of the Vermont farm with the family that's trying to run it. It's just like no other experience. We really try to make you feel like you're a part of our agritourism business when you're there.
Do you come from that area originally, Michelle?
I currently live in my since passed on grandparent home with my husband and kids. And I grew up 5 acres away. My parents live right next door.
Oh my gosh, how wonderful. That's a great story. What lavender products do you produce there?
So we produce a lot of products, culinary as well as personal wellness and beauty care. We produce hand lotions and massage oils as well as bath and body wash, hand soap, bar soaps. We have culinary lavender sugar, lavender salts. We carry lavender balsamic vinegars as well as lavender maple syrup, our own local honey. We grow mint and chamomile that we do sell dried. The possibilities are really endless, and we're forever making new products.
And you have a website, I believe, where people can come and see what the farm looks like and what products you have. That's right?
Yes. We have a web store on our website, so you can kind of check out a lot of the things we sell. Whether you've been to the farm in the summer and have a favorite product you'd like to reorder in the winter, or it's just your first time, we understand you can't always get to us, so we'd like to make it as convenient as possible. On our web store, we offer everything that we sell in the shop, and we'll take special custom instructions for things like holiday baskets and things like that.
Michelle, you've created value-added experiences, I'll call them, at your farm. One of them is date night. So tell us about date night.
So we have what we call romantic date night experience. We consider this to be a very exclusive and original idea that actually my husband came up with due to the fact that he enjoys dating me, and the environment and the farm that we're in is so romantic. We built a gazebo about a year and a half ago. This spring, due to COVID, we had to think outside the box and figure out how we could continue to bring business in, knowing that the foot traffic would not be the same. So we decided to enclose this gazebo with an acrylic panel. So it's basically like a little bitty, mini, you know, weather-protected gazebo. It sits at the top of the hill, so your views are 360. We created Date Night. What Date Night is it's an exclusive experience where you have that gazebo for the entirety of the evening. There is no end time. We provide a charcuterie board as farm to table and fresh as we possibly can from vegetables from our own garden. The reason we find Date Night is so exclusive is a lot of times you will spend time with your significant other going out to a restaurant. Well, we've all learned how to cook pretty good, especially due to COVID. Romantic date night experience is not about the food that we serve you. It is about the experience with your partner. We create a romantic environment with blankets and pillows. Inside the gazebo is a fire table, so you've got an inside fire table. We have a fireplace set up outside, so you can light that at sunset. We provide s'mores for that romantic feed your partner opportunity, as well as heart-shaped sparklers, because we feel that you're never too old to experience the fun that you had when you were a kid, such as sparklers and s'mores. And it's really, for us, all about reminding you yourselves, ourselves, on why we began to date. Rather than focusing on the food and the service that you're getting, what you're focusing on during date night is the views and the romance, looking into your partner's eyes, and really remembering why you're there. Because date night has no end time, it's really exclusive. So we only book one date night at a time at this point, and you have that for the entirety of the evening. Whereas when you're in a restaurant, there's an end time. When the meal's over, it's time to go. For us, after we've provided you with your charcuterie board and slight bit of instructions, we bid you farewell for the evening, and thereby giving you the ultimate private romance.
So how have people used date night? Do you hear back from people?
People tell us it is one of the most beautiful things that they've ever done. One couple told us that they actually added on to their experience by hiring our private chef. And the lady's quote was, "I've been to France, and those are the best mussels I've ever had."
Oh, wow.
So people that have been and done some really nice, you know, high-end things are coming to us and saying, "Wow, this is like nothing we've ever done before." We've had restaurant owners that are local. We've had a restaurant owner from Burlington as well as Plattsburgh, New York, come to date night to get away from the city, to get away from that You know, going out to eat where it's just another steak. This is not just another date. This becomes an anniversary, a proposal, possibility. We even would have a wedding at our farm should someone ask. We've actually had two people ask about weddings this summer. We are really selling you the romance and exclusivity of spending time with your partner. And anytime you go anywhere else, it's not about that. It's about, you know, the commercialism of it all. And we're not bringing you the commercialism. We're bringing you each other.
I'm falling in love as you're telling me about this. What a wonderful idea. And have you had some proposals up there?
We are pretty sure we've had some proposals. We've had a lot of anniversaries there. People tell us, you know, it's now become a bucket list item. They just are blown away by the beauty and the originality of it all.
That's great. Hey, we have a call from Dave in Plainfield. Dave, thanks for calling Vermont Viewpoint.
Good morning, folks. Gee, this is the best thing I've heard, boy. I'm 71 tomorrow, and I'd like to take a... You know, my girlfriend, I've got a girlfriend for 30 years. She's also my nurse. So no, imagine that, 30 years. We never got married, but, Oh no, I'm serious. This is something I want to go up there. You know, you got to be really excited, and it's so boring with the COVID. This sounds great. But I wanted to tell you folks a lavender story real quick.
Sure.
I was taking lavender because I had really high blood pressure. I was doing organic. I was sick of the local medicine, so I started taking, Indian snake root and a few other things, hawthorn, and it wasn't enough, so I started taking lavender, and I really like what happens when you just take one lavender pill, the way your digestive system tastes so good. But I wanted to say, I took two lavender at one point, and oh my God, it put my heartbeat down to like 41, 42. Two lavender, we tried it a couple of times, I just wanted to mention that, but I think it's part of the whole, Bach herbal remedy thing, it sounds like to me, the herbal flower. And sure. I really got me excited this morning. I'd like to get a lot of these products that Michelle has there personally. I really like what it did to my stomach, and I can see the positive aroma effect. It's just so nice stuff. But I just wanted to mention that. Now, I will be in touch with you to go up to your place.
Excellent. Well, Dave, thanks for your call. Michelle, there you go. You better get that date night ready for Dave and his longtime girlfriend. The effects of lavender he mentioned, I don't know if that's something that you do provide is, you know, something that you would take the lavender. Is that right?
So we don't sell any internal lavender products as far as like taking a pill. We do have lavender balsamic vinegar. We have lavender maple syrup. We sell culinary buds, so if you wanted to cook with them, we certainly can provide you with culinary-grade, certified, naturally grown lavender buds. As far as internal, we're not doctors. We kind of stray from that, but we certainly have heard other people that have had great results by using lavender in a culinary or internal way.
Yeah. Any supplements that you do take, you really should make sure, too, that it's safe with your own medical professional. So now you have something else. You do some stargazing up there. Tell us about what that's all about.
So stargazing, again, we are capitalizing on the fact that it's so expanse where we are. We sit on top of the hill, 1,600 feet. And people come to us, actually we have a local photographer who's quite wonderful. They come to photograph the sky at night. There is no light pollution. You can see as far as you can imagine. They're coming to film the Milky Way. They're coming to film storms. So stargazing, people come. It's kind of a smaller version of date night, a little more affordable version of date night. And we provide you with a telescope as well as a romantic setting so that you, after dark, can gaze at the stars. We've got a little stargazing book trying to help recognize the constellations that you might see. So stargazing, again, we're just trying to give you the most romantic position that you can put you and your partner in so that you can forget about, you know, the high-tech world and the smartphones and the kids and all the things that cause the stress in our lives. We really go out of our way to find experiences that are unique that help you get back to the roots of romance.
Michelle, are you open for these things now?
We are not. Unfortunately, we are not set up to be winterized, so date nights and stargazing are really best experienced May through mid-October.
Okay. And how has COVID affected your business?
COVID affected our business in a few different ways. We have a quarter of the foot traffic that we had the year before. However, because of social media and the fact that people are on their phones all the time looking for something to do, it did give us the notoriety that we are a unique experience, as well as the fact that we are open air. So when you're on a 10-acre farm, you don't have to wear your mask. There's a constant breeze, and it's very private and exclusive. With COVID, we expanded our abilities to do date night and kind of juiced it up a little bit, as well as began to offer very exclusive camping. We only allow 8 to 9 people on our 10 acres. Thereby, this summer, when all the campgrounds were closed, you could come to our farm and camp because you were an acre from your next, say, camper. So, again, we provided that exclusive experience where other places could not do that because campgrounds are, per se, a little crowded.
I'm guessing you're part of the hospitality industry. Have you been able to apply for any CARES Act money?
We did receive a federal loan that allowed us to continue operations through the summer, so we're super grateful for that. Again, it was a loan. It was not a grant. We did get a small grant from a small division of the Vermont Department of Agriculture, and that was for the agricultural firms that changed their business model in a unique way to show that they would continue to survive with COVID. And our way was to begin wiring our small retail shop for electricity, as well as enclosing the gazebo. So that we were awarded that for our originality of changing our business model to continue due to COVID.
Did the closure of the Canadian border affect you much? Do you get, in a normal year, which would have been last year, people coming in from Canada to your place?
Absolutely. Canada is only 2 miles from us, so for us, it's just the next town over. We have family and friends over there. By the border closing, it definitely cut down on traffic, as well as the fact there are a few lavender farms just over the border in Quebec. When you go for that day outing, you can actually visit more than one lavender farm. So it becomes encouraging that we're all so close and can share information as well as sharing customers. Each lavender farm is very, very different. So visiting them all is highly encouraged by us.
And what else have you been doing or what's going on at Lavender Essentials that we haven't discussed yet?
So the property at Lavender Essentials, depending on your base of faith, is very, very powerful to many people. We have a labyrinth on the property. I'm very proud to say that my husband built the labyrinth with a tractor, and we've planted some lavender in that, so we call it the Lavender Labyrinth. But little did we know, after we built this labyrinth, that throughout time, not all at the same time, but there has been 3 labyrinths built within a 3-mile radius of each other. 2 on the road we live on, myself and 1 down the road, as well as 1 in Quebec. We're finding, as people continue to visit the farm, they're finding our farm extremely spiritually powerful. Now, I don't know what the coincidence of 3 labyrinths in a 3-mile square radius is, but I feel that it is something. People come and they find that when they sit on the ground and touch the earth, that they're really feeling a very powerful, whether it's the view or the expanse, or the fresh air, or the spirituality that you have, it is super powerful at our farm. People just really, they never want to leave. Sometimes they call it the most beautiful place they've ever been.
That's really stunning. Tell people one more time about the power of lavender. We only have about a minute left.
So lavender, not only is it good for aromatherapy properties in calming you, helping you sleep, but it also has antiseptic, antifungal, antibacterial properties. Thousands of years ago, the Roman soldiers did use that as wound dressings, as well as cleaning their clothes and with common household cleaners. Lavender is one of the most versatile essential oils really on the market. It is powerful in many, many ways.
Michelle Capron is the co-owner of Lavender Essentials of Vermont. They're in Derby. And, Michelle, I can smell the beautiful lavender from here. I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
And thank you for having me.
The CBS News update is next. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Exciting things are happening in Warren Village. The Pitcher Inn and Warren Store are under new management. Upgrades and improvements are in the works, maintaining the ambiance and character while breathing new energy and resources into these iconic properties. We are open while practicing all CDC protocols. Come for lunch at our Rockin' Deli and see for yourself what the buzz is all about. Both businesses are hiring, especially seeking fine dining room staff and sales associates for our boutique. Still fun, funky, and friendly, but better than ever. Open daily on Main Street, Warren Village.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. And now the toys and games portion of today's show. I personally think if you happen into a downtown that has a toy store, you have reached some form of Eden. This is a place where you should live or frequent often. Voila, Montpelier. It has our gorgeous capital, great shops, and one of those is Woodbury Mountain Toys. What more could one ask for? And in this pandemic-hampered year, one thing that people have been rediscovering is the pure joy and laughter-inducing closeness that things like toys, games, and puzzles can create. Our next guest is the owner of Woodbury Mountain Toys on State Street in Montpelier, Karen Williams. Welcome, Karen.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rick.
And listeners, if you have toys or games questions, you want to share how they have helped during this quarantine, you can call us at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. That's 877-291-TALK. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Karen, what got you into the toy business?
Well, I kind of fell into it. I was helping out the previous owner, the Dions. We met through homeschooling, and they needed some extra help when they would go away on vacation. And I'd come in to work at the toy store. When they get back from vacation, they were like, "Do you want to buy the toy store?" I said, "Sure." And they go, "Well, maybe next year." And so, yeah, January of 2000, I purchased the store. It was it sticked quite nicely too into everything that I love.
So. Yeah, it does. It takes a certain kind of person to run a toy store successfully, and I think that's you. Why do you think it is a perfect fit for you?
Well, I enjoy the customers. I enjoy the product. As I said, when my kids are in their 30s now, but at the time homeschooling, I feel like everything you do is learning. Every game is a learning experience, and it's, you just make it fun. So you make learning interesting and exciting, and games definitely do that. I enjoy it.
And I think anyone who's ever been to Woodbury Mountain Toys knows that you and your staff never miss an opportunity to dress up.
Yes. Well, of course, we're looking forward to Buddy the Elf Day. Kind of the beginning of dressing up as an elf throughout the holiday season.
How exciting for one. All right, tell us about a toy today in the store.
Okay. You just any toy?
Yeah, it's your store. Take us around. Show us what you got. Get us excited about something. It's Christmas coming up. People want to play.
I always love Legos, and I personally enjoy playing with Legos. The build is great. I think that it is good for your brain too, because it is a puzzle that you are putting together and you get to play with it afterwards. And I have, all the Harry Potter puzzles or the Legos, with the castle and the clock tower and, just Hagrid's hut and the train. And I love those. Other things that are fun are, the different board games. We've got some new ones. There's one called Dragomino, which is by the same people that made King Domino and Queen Domino. And this one's for the younger kids, and it's got dragons involved. And it's kind of like a domino building game. So that's exciting and fun. There's also the Crazy Aaron's Thinking Putty. He's come out with some that the more you play with it, the harder it gets. So it almost like breaks when you're pulling it apart. So you can really get some anger out on the Crazy Aaron's Thinking Putty.
And you really develop strong muscles in your hands, I would think.
Right. And he's so fabulous. It's made in the U.S. They're out of Pennsylvania. He hires developmentally disabled adults primarily for his factory, and it's like this great working crew. They have a lot of fun with what they're doing.
So what's the name of that again, Karen?
It's Crazy Aaron's Thinking Putty. And yeah, and Aaron is he's a great guy, and he's very kind. So good company.
I know Christmas is on the way, but you have had people coming in since March looking for fun stuff.
Yes, they haven't been coming in March, but
well, true.
I was doing the phone orders curbside pickup for about 8 weeks there, and they were looking for puzzles and a lot of science kits, because having kids at home learning, they're looking for the alternatives. Yes.
Why is it that this kind of a time we do embrace these laughter-inducing and thought-producing toys and games?
Well, we really need a distraction at this point. I think the puzzles have been so great for a lot of people, just to take their focus away from all the negative that's going on outside, and find a little happy place. I think that. And that's why it's important. It's important to find the joy. And that's being open right now and seeing customers come in, and it's almost like they've left a mantle off of, at the door, and they come in and they take in the toys and the colors, and it makes them happy. And it's really nice to see. I know I'm so lucky that I've been able to keep working throughout this, and I'm blessed with my business, that's for sure.
I would imagine you don't see many frowns. I think of butterflies, I think of puppies, babies, and toy stores, right? You cannot be around these things or in these things and not be just bursting with joy and happiness.
It is fun. I mean, there are some kids that leave disappointed when they aren't getting everything they would like, but it's okay. We've seen it.
Yeah, good. I'm sorry I threw that tantrum last time that I was there. So.
I know. You really wanted that puppet, but.
I can go in there and find something like marbles that are colored so beautifully and have, are supposed to be like different planets or something that just make me so happy, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I bought a chess checkers backgammon set from you for a friend and her 8-year-old daughter. The 8-year-old sat down and started to play chess with me. Neither of us really knew the rules. Right. And she's artsy, and she envisioned the whole concept of a king and queen in their castle needing protection.
Excellent.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
I've never made that kind of connection, but it was very interesting to see someone, I'm a more analytical thinker, a more logical thinker. She's more artsy. I'm thinking of the rules of the game, and she has taken it to a whole new level of almost like role playing.
Right. Yeah. That's amazing. And it's great. Yeah. Chess is, I think of it as a mathematical game, but truly it's, to bring it to that next level of thought is—I love that.
Yeah, it was like a play for her, and it was play for both of us. It was really pretty great. All right, give us another game that you're kind of wild and excited about.
Let's see here. It's so hard.
I know.
I'm in the back and I'm looking at my wall of back stock of games here, and it's just it's. yeah, there's, I mean, you can go simple and say go, or, and Sephiro is another one that I really like. It's by Mindware. And it's a game, and it says for ages 6 and up. And my daughter, who is 33, and I, we love this game. We, although she hasn't been home in a while, she's been in London for the past year. But so you have to, you're trying to collect the jewels by laying down these tiles around them. But there's a strategy involved where you don't want to put the tile down that will give your opponent, you know, two jewels that you can pick up. So it's a simple, you know, two-player game that, as I said, is for ages 6 and up. But as an adult, we loved it as well. So I love it when a game surpasses age groups that way. And one of my, another great game is, of course, is Settlers of Catan. And it's their 25th anniversary, so they've got this big 25th anniversary board that they're selling. And that game is consistently, it's fun to play. You're developing your world, and a lot of families like that. You have to be a little older to play that, I'd say.
Right.
9 or 10.
Tell us the name of the game with the jewels again.
It's Sephiro. It's Sapphiro.
All right.
I like games like, you know, that. Like, it's, there's just like the simple two-player games, like Goblet is another favorite of mine.
Is that a drinking game?
No.
Oh.
Sorry.
No. No, I mean, asking for a friend. Please, Karen, explain about the game itself.
Well, the game is it's a wooden game made by Blue Orange Games, and it's you're basically trying to get four pieces in a row to win. But you can gobble your opponent's player because they're nesting pieces. So you know, if you play a larger piece and then they play a smaller piece, you can gobble theirs up to put four in a row. So it's one of these, it's very simple to learn, but there's a good, you know, a good learning curve, a good strategy as you go along. Same thing, like it's ages 7 and up, but I've schooled some MIT students on this game when they came
really? That's interesting.
Which I always love that. You know, it's like, yeah, they're like, oh, this looks simple. I'm like, let's play.
Yeah. And since we're going to have the gobbler on Thanksgiving, this gobbling game might be a perfect one to break out if you have a small gathering at Thanksgiving.
That's right, because it's just for two players. So it's for the...
Oh, excellent.
For the intimate Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, that's outstanding. And is it Goblet or Gobbler?
Goblet.
Okay, I wasn't so far off.
I know, it's a goblet. It's like the glass.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Yeah.
All right. I feel a little bit better.
Don't you worry.
Now, I mentioned before how much better a town is with a toy store. Why is that?
Well, I think it's important to the to the community. It's actually... this time of year this year is a little different just because it's not as much of a meeting place. But normally on the weekends, you'll have families coming in and gathering and chatting while their kids are checking out the toys. And so there's, you know, I love it when, you know, people recognize each other and, you know, they socialize, they feel comfortable. Kids feel comfortable coming in here, after school. And, you know, it's a nice place to be, and it is, I think it is a good asset for our community because I think you need to have a store like this, like to be able to have a place to find all your, you know, puzzles and your games, and for a newborn baby, for, you know, your infant toys. And so I think we need a variety of stores in the downtown, but toy store is important. So
what kind of restrictions do you have right now because of COVID?
Presently, everybody, you know, you have to have masks. We have sanitizer by the door. No more than 8 customers at a time. I could theoretically have more than that, but that's what we feel comfortable with as my staff and the customers. So, it seems to be working. I also got this great Purifil air purifier that is used in institutions and, you know, schools. So it it clears 99.5% of H1N1 in less than 5 minutes, apparently. Yeah. So I'm happy that we have that. It makes me, as I said, my staff and customers feel more secure.
Yeah.
One more step, and I am offering still the phone orders and curbside pickup, and I have offering private appointments before I open and after I close if somebody doesn't feel comfortable being in the store with other customers.
Well, that's fantastic.
They can give me a call.
We'll get back to toys and games, but one thing that I love and during this pandemic and being quarantined, I have really been racing to do puzzles as fast as I can. I'm really amazed how I can sit down and get it done in a number of several hours. But what kind of puzzles do you have that are really interesting and fun for people?
Well, right now I've been ordering as many puzzles as I possibly can get. It's a difficult thing to keep to inventory right now. I have the Ravensburger puzzles. I have Seiko, Eurographics. I just put another 1,000-piece puzzle order in from Eurographics. So, and I have puzzles for kids too, for the 4 puzzles that are the 24-piece on up to, I think I've got some 2,000-piece puzzles out there. They've been difficult to get, but yeah, so I have puzzles for everybody.
Yeah, the 24-piece puzzles, those are the ones I was referring to that are taking me just a few hours to get done. So I'm really impressed with myself.
That's good. Well done, Rick.
All right. Karen Williams, give us another toy. Let's play with a toy.
Oh, what about the snap circuits? Those are great. They basically are teaching kids electronics, and they have sets there's a snap circuit pro that you can do like 500 different projects. There's one that's green energy. So you're learning about solar power and wind power. And there's a great manual, the instruction manual mm-hmm. included. And it's interesting because it says for 8 and up. And I've had parents come in and they're like, my 6-year-old daughter loves this. She just changes things around and just to be able to understand how electricity works because you're making connections. And there's a whole bunch of different sets. They range in price from $20 to $100. But I love those. Those are a lot of fun.
Boy, yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, and there's like different ones. There's one on motion, there's one on light, there's one. It's called My Home, and basically you learn how the power works in the household.
Hmm.
And you can build these structures. It's pretty cool.
All right. Give us a game.
A game. You're into the games.
Yeah. I grew up as a board, playing board games and never really caught on with computer games. Love board games. Just think they're fabulous.
I know. Well, there's a lot of, I have some Trivial Pursuit games. Like with sports and animals. I like those. There's also the cooperative games that they have developed, not just for younger kids, but older, like Forbidden Desert is a good one where basically you're trying to get off the desert and you're working together as a team. And maybe you may not. you may not survive. So you have to, those have been very popular. And there's a whole series of pandemic games which have been bizarrely popular. During this time, I wish somebody would solve the game and solve it in real life too.
Is that how it works? If you play the game and win, you might actually be able to solve this entire pandemic.
Wouldn't that be great?
If only life could imitate art that closely, huh?
I know, yes.
Karen Williams, it sounds like you're still loving what you're doing there at Woodbury Mountain Toys.
I do. I really do.
That is so great.
Yeah.
Karen Williams and the staff at Woodbury Mountain Toys in Montpelier can bring a smile to anyone who steps into their magical shop. Karen, I want to thank you for sharing some of that joy with us this morning.
Oh, well, you're welcome. I really appreciate you giving me a call, Rick. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
That is our show for today. Vermont Viewpoint is produced by Taylor Dobbs and directed by Peter Cormier. And I'm Rick Singeri, and I will meet you back here tomorrow.